Welcome to the Smoky Musket Podcast. And that was me doing my best Spencer Hall impression. I'm Mike Miller, site manager of the Smoky Musket. And before we jump into this week's episode, I want to thank everyone for sticking with us through the football season. I know there were some changes the way we were doing the podcast with the Blog Talk Radio, and the audio quality wasn't that great. But we're constantly trying to improve our content. And there's actually some really exciting stuff on the horizon. And you can expect some details about that later on, or I guess maybe in the first or second quarter of next year. I'm not going to give anything away, but there is some really exciting stuff that we're planning. If this is your first time listening, we want to encourage you to rate and subscribe to the Smoky Musket Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. Check out the Smoky Musket at SmokyMusket.com. Follow us on Twitter at Smoky Musket. We're going to be kicking off kind of a Morgantown bar fight tournament that's going to be kind of fun, so follow us there to vote. And like us on Facebook. I'm going to go ahead and kick the show off, but before I do, I want to issue a disclaimer that what you're going to hear in a minute here, it was recorded on Tuesday night, and it looked like Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy was bound for the Tennessee job. And of course, we all know that changed, and he's staying at Oklahoma State, and the Vols have now been turned down by like their 17th choice by the time you're hearing this. I want to go ahead and thank Hunter Cook from Big 12 Diehards and Melissa Trebewasser from Frogs of War for coming on to help Bart and I recap this Big 12 season. We kind of take a look back and give our thoughts on each program, and then we preview this coming Saturday's Big 12 championship game between Oklahoma and TCU. Also, you're going to hear an old familiar voice that we've kind of been desperately missing from the podcast. So you're in for a treat on this one. Enjoy.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in! Touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings! And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Hi, Godders. Welcome to this Big 12 Championship edition of the Smoking Musket Podcast. I'm Bart Keeler, recording from outside the heart of college football. I actually just drove by Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the site of the 2017-18 College Football National Championship game. It is lit up in blue for the SEC Championship game. I don't like it. I'm a Falcons fan. It should be red. Whatever. I am joined tonight by three very special guests. First off, site manager from www.smokingmusket.com, Mike Miller. Mike, how's it going?
It's better now that Skype cooperated with me.
Yeah, it was
public service announcement to anybody that uses Skype. Don't update to Skype 8. Because it's garbage, so we're good now.
Well, yeah, but luckily we were able to get in two Big 12 experts, if you will, from Big 12 diehards. It's Hunter Cook, also just a generally knowledgeable person on college football. Hunter, thanks for joining us this evening.
Oh, anytime. I'm always down for the cause.
Oh, man, I'm glad you're here. And also joining us, her team is playing for a Big 12 championship for the first time since they joined the conference. Welcome, Melissa Trebewasser.
It's great to be here, fellas. Thanks for having me back on.
Do you feel vindicated that you actually get to play for a conference championship this time?
I mean, you know, I have mixed feelings about it because having not had this opportunity 3 years ago cost TCU a chance to, you know, make the playoffs. But having this opportunity this weekend could very well serve to cost the Big 12 a chance to make the playoffs. Well, I really don't care about that. I guess I'm supposed to. So I definitely have some.
If it were anyone other than Oklahoma, we would probably all care a little bit more.
Probably true. This is probably true.
Well, I am glad you all joined us here tonight. Real quick, by Godders, how we're going to do this. We're going to go through the teams in the Big 12. There are 10 of them because we can't do math. We're going to go through teams 10 through 3. So that's Kansas through Oklahoma State. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the college, the Big 12 championship. We're just going to give one thought on each team based on how they finished the season. So that means we have to start off with the Kansas Jayhawks, who finished 1-11 on the season, 0-9 in conference play. Mike, just real quick, your first initial thought on the Kansas football season.
I don't know. Like, starting off the season, I thought they were actually, you know, maybe going to win a couple games because they did run all over us. Of course, so did everybody else, really. So it was really disappointing, honestly, because I thought they were at least like 3 wins, maybe. An improvement over last year, but no.
Yeah, Hunter, your thought on Kansas football this season?
It's an abject disaster. Like, there's no other way to, like, it's a disaster zone. It's so bad. Like, they're what, like, in the past 3 years, 30-something or 20, high 20s, low 30s in conference play. If it, you know, people forget that Tech beat Kansas in football, but outside of that, like, this might be the worst Kansas team in the history of the, in the very recent history of bad Kansas teams. It might be. That is
something.
A feat.
That is saying something.
Incredibly unprecedented. Like, it's almost impressive the levels of ineptitude they were able to get up to, even though they had, like, Joe Denise and Dorrance Armstrong and Khalil Herbert. Like, they had good individuals. They just did not have anything else. It's impressive. It's hard to be this bad.
Moving on from Kansas, Melissa, I'll let you take this team.
Hang on one second. I think Smitty's in.
Uh-oh.
Crashing the party.
It feels good.
Oh, it's a reunion of people I kind of know. I love it. Smitty, I know. Smitty, I've met. He's the only person here I've actually met.
I'm sorry. We'll make that trip out there eventually. All right, so like I was saying, Melissa, we'll let you, moving on from Kansas, we'll let you talk about this team, your least favorite team, I think, in the conference. Baylor, 1-8 in the conference. Their one win was against Kansas, 1-11 overall. It was bad, but just tell me what you thought of Baylor football this year, Melissa.
Well, you know, it's funny that you allow me to be first on this because I literally ran into Matt Rhule today, like, face into, he was walking out of the gym at the school I teach at because he's recruiting one of our players. So that was just kind of a moment. It was pretty neat. I was wearing green, though, so I kind of threw up on myself a little bit. It's fine. I hate to say this, but I have a lot of respect for Matt Rhule. I think he's got a lot of talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They're very young. They were very terrible this year, and they very much baited TCU into a fight that they didn't need to get into on Friday. But I don't think Baylor will be the doormat for long. I think that bowl eligibility next year is a reasonable expectation, but I also don't think Baylor is going to be 10 wins and competing for conference championship under Matt Rhule anytime soon. I hope they're decent enough to not drag us down a little bit more than they did this year.
Yeah.
But I hope that they continue to kind of suck for a while.
Smitty, your thoughts on Baylor football?
Ooh, this is going to be fun. Same thing that Melissa said, that I really like Matt Rhule. I thought what he did at Temple, like, before they hired him, was actually really impressive. They got to the point where they made Penn State have to literally bury a game tape because they sacked the quarterback 10 times. That was a good time. But, so I was a little bit kind of like, I'm not a huge fan of Baylor, so I was a little bit, like, disappointed whenever they got Matt Rhule because he's a legit coach, and I'm not going to be surprised if they already show a lot of signs to, like, of improvement next year. It felt like Baylor got into a lot of close games and just they never actually got, like, over the hump, like, outside of Kansas. But they were competitive, which is kind of saying something after, you know, like, a lot of schools that go through similarly sanctioned events. How about that? Not necessarily the same nature, but whenever, like, a school goes through something like that, then the football program tends to be bad for a couple of years. I would expect them not to be bad, which is just all credit to Rule and his staff, honestly.
All right, so I think we agree on Baylor that it was bad, but it wasn't as bad as Kansas. So moving up the standings, the favorite team of one of the members of this podcast tonight, we'll go to Texas Tech. The Red Raiders, 3-6 on the season, 6-6 overall. They started off really hot, and then they hit the conference and forgot how to play football for a couple games, or forgot how to finish a game, I guess is a better explanation. Hunter, your thoughts on your favorite Texas Tech Red Raiders football team this season?
Favorite is a stretch. Alma mater is true, but favorite is a stretch.
Yeah, we all know going back to Hunter's childhood that he's a Longhorn fan. We all know that.
You gotta stop with that. I knew this would happen. No, okay. Let's talk some Red Raiders, and I'll try not to eat up like 30 minutes on this. Look, I don't know what the right call is for this coaching situation, but I do know that there's no like definite smart choice yet. Like, yes, Cliff Kingsbury has been massively, massively underwhelming. This season was massively underwhelming for what we originally thought that was going to happen after the first three games. Of course, like Texas Tech going 3-0, ranked for like once, or not 3-0. Yeah, they were 3-0. It like ranked for the first time since Cliff's inaugural year in 2013. Like, and just kind of like a really baffling microcosm of everything that has played Texas Tech in the past. Bad penalties, poor offensive play at the worst possible time, definitely a sketchy secondary, and issues against the run. And I think they really pulled it together, and they got the win over Tom Herman, and they got to a bowl game. And I think that based on the comments from like Shimonek to Cliff, when he's like, they literally have Shimonek on record saying, hey, like, time's running out. And for me, that only means one thing. Like, Cliff was coaching for his job against Texas. Now, when you need a Tim Beck red zone disaster to keep your job, that's probably not, like, where you want to be as a program. And watching Tennessee with this whole, like, Greg Schiano stuff and the lengths that they're going to get Mike Gundy, where they're literally having Peyton Manning call him, the consensus best player in their history, calling him and selling him and trying to sell him on this program. It is making me very much question retaining him and whether that's the right call, because everyone always says, like, oh, well, who are you going to get? If you fire him, who are you going to get? We just watched Tennessee hire Greg Schiano and then fire Greg Schiano quicker than Anthony Scaramucci. Like, it's true. Like, this happened in less than 24 hours, in less than 12 hours. My shifts at work are longer than he was the head coach of Tennessee. I don't know if it is the right call to stay out of a coaching search if this is who you're up against. If that's what you're playing against, man, like, throw the ball. Like, I do something. But I really do think that this is, like, and we said this last year, too, which I have no idea if this will hold or not. This next year will be an absolute, like, hell for Cliff. He will have 10 defensive starters coming back. He might have 8 offensive starters coming back. He's a 4-star receiver coming in next year that I'll probably get some early playing time. Has all of these tools, and if he can't get to 7 or 8 wins with that, then it's probably not going to happen, and it's probably time to cut ties. Like, it's been very, very bad with random bright spots. I'll say that very young team, a lot of hope for the future, but the clock's ticking, and it's running out more rapidly than anyone would like to believe.
Well, that is the all the Texas Tech commentary I think we need for this podcast. thank you, Hunter. Moving on.
For this offseason.
Moving on up the standings. I'm going by the Big 12 Sports.com standings, which are different than the ESPN standings. I don't know which one are official.
It's also probably incorrect.
Right, but I'm not going to try to decipher Big 12 tie-breaking procedure or anything, or any Big 12 rules, to be quite honest. I don't care about the Big 12 rules because they don't make any sense, and they'll change tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, moving up, Texas, 5-4, 6-6 overall. Melissa Treeblosser, let's get your thoughts on the Texas Longhorns.
Well, you know, I'm going to steal this from someone, something someone tweeted on Twitter, but here we are again with Texas Tech sitting with a disappointing record and no idea who their QB is going to be next year. I think the jury is definitely still out on Sam Ellinger. Herman got them to bowl eligibility behind a really, really great defense and a really inept offense. And you can say some of that is, well, we didn't have the players. It's not like Charlie Strong struggled in recruiting. So Herman is supposed to be the guy with the Mary Dolls. And it seems like it didn't quite work out in Austin in year one. Now, it's not fair to judge him based on this season on the offensive side of the ball, especially with the issues they had with running backs and offensive line. But at the end of the day, I think that Texas fans are unhappy. I know Texas Tech fans are unhappy. They always are. But, you know, I think that the Texas fans are unhappy just based on what they saw this year. Did you see improvement from Sam Ellinger? I mean, I feel like he really took a step backwards over the course of the season, probably because he had his head bashed in 400 times. This defense is going to lose a lot of key pieces this offseason. They're losing Connor Williams. He's already said he's not going to play in the bowl. So the offensive line is still going to be an issue. This is a crucial recruiting cycle for Herman, who still he can bring in a lot of big names. But much like it was with Mack Brown and Charlie Strong before him, you can find the standards, but can you develop them? And that's been a problem in Austin for the last decade. It'll be interesting to see if they finally do get things turned around, because as much as I hate them and as much as I love beating the snot out of them every year, eventually we need them to get back to being an 8, 9, 10 win team and competing for Big 12 championships if we want to be back on the national stage.
Yeah, that's the kind of the catch 22 with Texas, is that it's nice that they're not good because we like having the opportunity to beat them, but at the same time helps the conference when they're good. We'll skip West Virginia in the standings because obviously we can talk more about that between Smitty, Mike, and I. So I'll let Mike answer this one. Kansas State 5-4, 7-5 overall. Bill Snyder with another winning season there in Manhattan. But was it a disappointment? Because I think people were thinking Kansas State could be a dark horse for a Big 12 title run.
I think people were saying that. I didn't see it. I mean, this is about as Kansas State as you can get.
Fair.
Like this is Kansas State. I guess they've got a real decision with everything, with their coaching stuff going forward. Well, I remember a couple weeks ago, like, seeing tweets about Bill Snyder kind of pushing against everything and wanting his son to take over. So that might get messy if they try to move away from Bill Snyder this offseason. Like I said, that's just Kansas State.
Yeah, I want everyone else's opinion on this. I mean, the whole Bill Snyder, Deshaun Snyder, baton pass, where does that leave Kansas? Is that the right move for Kansas State? Where will that leave Kansas State? Hunter, you actually cover the conference somewhat. What do you think that the Kansas State situation ultimately will be?
Oh, man. I think they should go on another coaching search and get a guy who's going to really, like, grit it out. He's going to come in and have some great offensive line play. Yes, folks. I want him to hire offense again because I'll stand for him until the day I die. And they get to beat Texas, which will be hilarious again because that's all he does. Kansas State, I feel like you have to revise the expectations for their season the second they lose at Vanderbilt. So when we're talking about them as a Big 12 contender at the beginning of the year, then you go to Vanderbilt. You go to Vanderbilt and lose. You lose badly, where you look inept. You have your starting quarterback hurt. You're down to, like, your third-string quarterback at times. And I think going on the road in Lubbock and beating Texas Tech how they did, and I think going on the road in Stillwater and beating Oklahoma State how they did, makes this season a huge success. Because this is very easily a team that could have just, like, packed it in and be like, all right, we're done. We're getting manhandled. We got manhandled by Oklahoma. We got manhandled by everyone else. But, no, they stuck it out. This is where they won on the road in conference. This is just off the top of my head. Austin, Lubbock, Stillwater.
Those are three very hard places to get wins. I feel like you have to look at that as a success. What they should do after that, whether they should retain Sean Snyder, I don't know. What I do know is that they have, Bill Snyder has earned the benefit of the doubt with every single person on any single thing regarding football. Yeah, maybe his opinion toward his son is a little bit biased, but they kind of owe him that one. And who are you going to trust? The guy who knows football better than anyone else, or the person who only sees what they see on Saturdays? Who knows?
Right. Right. Well, Kansas State will be an interesting coaching watch this offseason, just because it always is. We don't know what Bill Snyder's future holds, and that's just a real unfortunate reality with, you know, the cancer scare he's had and just his age. And granted, we all, I think, on at least on this recording, and I think everyone in the Big 12 wants the best for Bill Snyder because he's an amazing patriarch of college football. But it is a question that we're going to have to watch in the offseason. All right, Smitty, let's talk about the most surprising team in the Big 12 this season. Iowa State, 5-4 in the conference, 7-5 overall. The Cyclones looked competent for most of the season, but also really incompetent at points in the season. And it was a weird up and down, but kind of consistent season for everyone in Ames. What were your thoughts on Iowa State and Matt Campbell this season?
Well, first off, we both know how we both feel about Matt Campbell. Or anybody that's been a long-term listener of this podcast knows Matt Campbell from Toledo. So, but yeah, so I'm not super surprised that they took a step forward. I was not expecting this large of a step forward. It's not, like I said, he's a good coach straight up. And the fact that I believe there's news with some type of contract extension, something today, someone might be able to fill that in for me. But it's not surprising at all that he was able to do very well. I want to see now what they're going to do recruiting wise, I guess that's looking a little bit too much in the future. But as for this year, I'm still kind of surprised that we were able to get the win at West Virginia, which, I mean, I would have liked to have seen the Cyclones with the story that they were being like America's team for a little bit there. It would have been nice for them to be a little bit more in the running, even though like the fact that they were like, I believe, tied for second and like legitimately, like a good shot to getting into the championship, was it like 3 or 4 weeks ago? But when was the last time Iowa State did that? Like, honestly, I'm not sure when the last time Iowa State was in the type of running. People that are veterans of the Big 12 would have to do that.
It's probably like the Seneca Wallace days, isn't it? Like, we're digging deep into the Iowa State record.
It's from the early 2000s, if not before then. We'll move on to from Iowa State to a team that I think a lot of people thought should finish number two, but the woman who's going to answer this question, her team beat them in Stillwater. Oklahoma State 6-3 in the conference, 9-3 overall. Melissa, this had to be a slightly disappointing end of the season for Oklahoma State, but was it what they deserved as a team?
It's definitely what they deserved based on all the crap they talked to us leading up to the TCU game and then refused to eat their humble pie afterwards. So,
this is
how
my
bad
answer.
Your senior QB wants to win. I mean, good lord. Those people acted like they were entitled. Oklahoma State isn't entitled to anything. They have yet to win anything more than a lot of games, which is good for them. That's awesome. Mike Gundy has really built that program, and it's unfortunate to me that while I really believe Mike Gundy wants to stay in Stillwater, this mullet is going to get called home to Tennessee where it belongs. So I think there is.
Are you implying that all mullets belong in Tennessee?
Yes.
Well, I have
this. That's a good implication.
I think this probably will be a 50-50 split.
Explain Gator Fan.
But, you know, I think if I'm an Oklahoma State fan, I'm incredibly disappointed. When you look at how many seniors are on their roster, the talent that they had on the offensive side of the ball, the way their defense was able to be good enough to win ball games, to they've lost a couple of really crucial games down the stretch, and of course they've lost to TCU at home, has to sting a little bit and feel like a missed opportunity. This was supposed to be their year, and while they played Oklahoma back and forth, I don't think many people outside of Oklahoma State fans really thought they had a shot in that game as close as it was, especially after that first play didn't go their way with the fumble overturn. So, you know, Mike Gundy's a great coach. He's one of the plays that not a lot of people have won. But, you know, I do believe that there's such thing as a stalemate. And I feel like he might have kind of run his course. All the drama with Boone Pickens Maybe that's just kind of gotten him fed up. He hasn't quite gotten over the Oklahoma hump, and it looks like Lincoln Riley is the real deal. You know, obviously Oklahoma's going to be replacing Baker Mayfield, so who knows. But until they can consistently beat Oklahoma, and by consistently, I mean 3 out of 10 times, I think the fans are going to continue to be frustrated that they keep, you know, running into that same state wall.
Yeah. So, something else that we should point out with Oklahoma State, all 3 of their losses, home.
Yeah.
Yes.
All 3 of their losses on the season were at home. If that does not fuel frustration when you had college football playoff hopes at the beginning of the year, I don't know what will. And the part of this Gundy coaching search that's kind of like flying under the radar is, who exactly do the Cowboys have stocked up in recruiting?
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is what they lose on offense. They lose their top 2 receivers in Marshall Leighton and James Washington. Lose Mason Rudolph, possibly one of the most prolific quarterbacks of all time. Lose 3 offensive linemen, 1 of which was a team captain, 2 of which I think were all conference. They will still have Justice Hill. They'll still have a couple of really, really young receivers. But who throws them the ball? They lose two of their inarguably best defensive backs, and will be turning over those positions to mostly like freshmen and sophomores, redshirt freshmen and sophomores, more than likely. Linebackers, you lose your best linebacker, Chad White, your defensive line. You return a little bit of depth, but who on Oklahoma State's defensive line actually jumped out at you? Where do we actually think this Oklahoma State team is going to be next year, whether Mike Gundy's there or not? Because I'm having a very hard time envisioning them being any higher than 5th, and that's with a couple of upsets. Where do they go? TCU has Sean Robinson, who we have known as a known commodity to replace Kenny Hill. Kyler Murray, who maybe not as good of a passer as Baker Mayfield, can run the ball. And if you don't think that Lincoln Riley already has like an entire read option package installed for him, you're wrong, because we already saw that.
Don't remind us.
I don't know where Oklahoma State's going to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Who do they go get? If they lose Gundy,
who do you go get?
I mean, they're screwed.
Les Miles. This is bad. It's got to be like Les Miles.
Right. Well, I think that's...
it's got to be like Les Miles, Neil Brown, maybe?
That's the reason I have this feeling.
The problem with Les Miles, though, is there's a lot of manure in Stillwater, and that grass is going to taste terrible. So I really have concerns if they end up with Les.
And all that's why I have this feeling that after all these years, like in the past, we've seen Gundy kind of like flirt with other coaching jobs. I think Tennessee's going to be the one that actually pulls him away. Because, of course, there's the rumors that they were offering like $8 million a year, which is insane. And you'd be dumb not to take that. But you're looking at a rebuilding year no matter where you're at. Do you want to start fresh?
Yeah.
Do you want to try something new?
Yeah.
And if you look at it, Butch Jones, you know, he left a couple 5-star players there at Tennessee. Maybe he can do something
And once all of this shakes out, what jobs will conceivably be open next year with all of these big jobs being open right now being filled? Because Arizona State's going to get a new person. UCLA already has their guy. A&M's going to get a new guy. A&M has to get a new guy. Florida State may get a good new guy. Florida already got a new guy. Where else are you gonna go?
This might be a
crap or get off the pot situation for Gundy, and if he's going to pull the trigger, it's going to be now, and it has to be now. I think he does understand that, which is why these Gundy rumors seem to feel, you know, not as much like his agent trying to ring up T. Boone Pickens for more oil money. It seems real. I kind of made fun of it earlier in the day, but the more that this came out and the more that people like actually in the know are like, yes, like this is possible. It's feeling more and more like a reality or an inevitability, I should say.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll move on from Oklahoma State because I know we have better things to talk about. And we've got Melissa on here. So let's just go ahead and dive into this Big 12 Conference Championship game. It's an 11 a.m. Central Time kickoff on Fox.
11:30. That's close to lunchtime.
Whatever. It's still before noon.
Boo.
Basically, what we're trying to tell you is that people in Central Time like to not have fun.
True.
Hey,
Hey, you can have a lot of fun before 11:30. Don't worry.
We do. We'll have a lot of fun before 11:30 in Morgantown. Anyway, so 11:30 kickoff on Fox. Who's our sponsor? I don't even know. They made up this game because it made them the Big 12 feel better about themselves and to get more money. But we do have some teams that, I mean, there is some definite bad blood between these two teams. Oklahoma versus TCU. Oklahoma 11-1, TCU 10-2. TCU, the number two team in the conference. One of their losses was to Oklahoma. Obviously, the two teams share a loss to Iowa State, which is kind of inexplicable for the 3 weeks that Iowa State was good. Melissa, because you're the TCU fan, let's talk about what your expectations are heading into this game.
You know, I just don't know what to expect. I think the thing that was so frustrating about the first game was just how ill-prepared TCU looked for the moment. And that's just not something that we've seen a lot of with Gary Patterson's team. So, you know, the one thing I don't expect to be the same is that. Like, I don't expect these guys to come out a little bit shell-shocked and a little bit, I mean, just kind of shaky overall and undisciplined. So my hope is that, you know, they play a little bit more like a TCU team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I don't think that they'll be kind of – it's not going to feel – like a home game for TCU, despite the fact the stadium's 20 minutes down the road, still going to be an OU favorable environment just based on sheer numbers. But I think that, you know, that they'll come out, they'll have a better game plan. Rodney Anderson really surprised everybody, frankly, with what he did to the Horned Frogs through the air and on the ground the last time these two teams met. But this is going to come down to a quarterback battle. I think the TCU defense will be just fine. I think they'll be competitive. I think they'll tackle better. But this is going to come down to which version of Kenny Hill shows up. And if Kenny Hill doesn't necessarily have to match shot for shot with Baker, but he has to at least be able to kind of throw his way into a win against this young Oklahoma secondary, something that he was definitely not able to. If Kenny plays the way he did against Baylor on Friday, then I think we've got a shot. But at the end of the day, asking Hill to do that on the big stage in the big moment isn't something that's worked out for TCU fans very often over the course of the last couple of seasons.
Or Kenny Hill at all.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had a good game. He's had some good games, but if we need TCU needs Kenny Hill to go out and win them a ball game over Baker Mayfield, it might be too tall of a task for him. If they can run the ball effectively, if they can make a couple of big plays off of play action, if the defense can get some pressure on the cornerback, especially from that front four without having to blitz too often, then, you know, Hill won't have to be the one that goes out and wins the game. But if those things don't come to fruition, then he's going to have the pressure is going to be on his shoulders, and generally, when the pressure's on his shoulders is when he makes mistakes. So I'm hoping for the best. I think that the vitriol directed towards him at parts of the season is completely unfair. He is who he is at this point. We just need to be realistic with what our expectations are. And, you know, my expectation is he will play well. I just don't know if playing well will be enough to overcome the tornado that is Baker Mayfield. Douchebag.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
Can I say douchebag on the podcast?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
You can, because that is the best way to describe that young person.
Because if you weren't, I was going to. So.
Good. Good to have someone have your back.
Yeah.
Like, I almost chimed in. You said you didn't know what to expect in the game, and I was just going to say you can expect the commentators. I don't know who's commentating the game, but you can expect them to be, like, full-on Baker Mayfield fellatio the entire game.
Well, you know, my game plan for beating Baker was actually to cover his jockstrap with super glue, because I figured that's where he's going to have his hands the whole game anyways, and we might get lucky.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when if we're going to talk about the announcing of this game and how this will be portrayed, this will be one of two things. Baker Mayfield, the arch villain of mankind, sent to destroy all the rules and norms, corrupt your children and give them beers, and, you know, to teach them the satanic Bible. Or it will be Baker Mayfield, the, you know, commanding general with fire. They're going to describe him like some, like, of those World War II historian hacks describe Patton. Like, it's one way or the other. There is no middle ground. You hate him or you love him. And that's it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And plus, like, I would say we've already kind of seen, at least West Virginia fans, what happened after the whole thing with the jock grabbing. The West Virginia-Oklahoma game last week was just all 100% Baker Mayfield for Heisman, like, propaganda for the entire thing. I do not expect it to be any different for the commentary for the Big 12 championship game. But I did have a question for Melissa real quick. So it seems that if OU wins, they're in a playoff, just straight up. What is the implication? Or like, how does TCU feel about if they win the Big 12, what their postseason looks like?
I don't see any scenarios that line up for TCU to make the playoffs outside of complete and total utter chaos. I don't even know if the chaos wouldn't be chaos. The chaos would be Wisconsin winning. You know, it would be probably Auburn winning comfortably. It would be the committee not being, you know, slobbering all over Alabama. And so I think that there's a legitimate source of respect for TCU. Yeah, that won't happen. So I'm not going to cry, you know, little sisters of the poor, woe is me, but I just don't think the committee wants to put in a two-loss TCU with the one-loss Alabama,
right,
even though they're not going to play for their conference championship, and a two-loss Ohio State, who God knows if they can screw over TCU to get the Buckeyes in. We know that they're going to do that. They've proven that before.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, it's easy to blame them, but it's hard to blame them when they're charged with making as much money, I mean, putting the four best teams in the country in the postseason. So
yeah,
it's a flawed system. I think Gary Patterson in his press conference today had a really astute point. He's been arguing for eight for a long time, and I think the reason why is because of TCU's past. And what he said is that having four teams eliminates a Cinderella story. And that's why we attempted to tune into March Madness, right? To see,
yep,
Florida Gulf Coast make it to the Final Four. And you look at I've been getting really frustrated with TCU fans that have not given UCF the time of day. It's not that long ago, in 2010, that TCU was undefeated going into the final week of the season and got absolutely no love as an opportunity to play for a national championship. And I do think they could have won that game over Auburn or over Oregon that year, but they just didn't have the name. And UCF,
yep,
is a legitimately good team. They have pros all over the field, and they're not even going to crack the top 10. It's ridiculous.
And let's not think of this as a guaranteed playoff spot, even if Oklahoma wins. You know where they were tonight? Third. I'm sure nothing bad has happened to a Big 12 team ranked number 3 in the playoff rankings going into conference championship
right
weekend. No,
right.
It's never happened, because this will absolutely be what happens regardless of how well Oklahoma beats TCU if that happens. If Oklahoma blows out TCU, TCU wasn't that good. Look, they have 3 losses. Yes, 2 of them were to,
yeah,
a playoff team, but, you know, what are you going to do? If they narrowly
right
beat TCU, it will be the exact same thing. And it's going to happen. It has a precedent of happening. It's happened this entire season. So I'm not counting this as a guarantee lock for the playoff spot. There's too much that can happen. There's too much that can happen. Miami could beat Clemson. You could have a one-loss Alabama enter the conversation, especially if Auburn wins, because then people want to see that rematch. What do you do with Georgia?
You don't
want to
know
what
to do with Georgia. I have a lot of fun.
we don't want
to University of Georgia.
But the idea that this is in any way guaranteed for Oklahoma, even if they win by 50 points, which I don't think they will, but even if they do, I think that's putting a little bit too much faith in this committee that has shown no consistency whatever. And it's hard to be consistent with this, and that's understandable, but the inconsistency has disproportionately affected the teams that are not in the SEC or the Big Ten every
right
single time.
Right. Let's focus a little bit more on the actual play on the game. I want to get everyone's prediction for the game before we get out of here. We'll start first with our the editor. I don't know. We haven't given you a nickname yet, but the editor, site manager of SmokingMusket.com, Mike Miller. Mike, what's your prediction for this game?
I'd love for TCU to win. I would absolutely adore that if that happened, just because I hate Oklahoma so much. But Oklahoma's too good on offense. Their defense is not great, but they're too good on offense. It's going to be another close one, I think. I don't think they're not going to blow TCU out. I don't have a score prediction. I don't know. It's just going to be close. Closer than Oklahoma fans want. maybe. I don't know. I haven't given much thought, honestly.
All right. Hunter, what does this game look like to you?
Oklahoma 42, TCU 31.
Yeah. Smitty.
His ejection is like, yeah, it's going to happen. Sorry.
Come on. Okay. No, yeah, I'm dejected because I know that, like, to me, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Smitty, what are your thoughts on this one?
I'm thinking it's going to be close, but until late, I'm thinking 35-24 Oklahoma to get a late touchdown to seal it, and I do not think Oklahoma loses again this season. I think they walk off with the champs.
Ooh. Oh,
hey,
so the question then becomes how quick does like Oklahoma erect a Baker Mayfield statue outside the stadium?
I personally already have that. It's post Heisman candidacy or whatever. It's post that, and then it's like, so it goes Heisman Trophy win.
You were gonna say post coital.
I would assume all of that is happening. But yeah, so I would assume Heisman winner, then national title, so I'm thinking like the statue is being erected in between those events, and then whatever they have there, whatever parade that they have, so there you go. It'll be undone or whatever, and then Lincoln Riley. Well, this is gonna be perfect. Didn't like Bob Stoops win a natty? Like, was it his first year?
Second year, I think.
Second. It was their first or second or something like that. So, yeah, this is perfect. Lincoln Riley can win the natty, really, start of the OU career, and then he can just lose big games for the next, 10 years.
Guys, the answer is simple. Lincoln Riley wins the national championship in the first year and then obviously gets hired as the Texas A&M coach. Duh.
Obviously.
Oh, my God, yes. Please, let it happen. Let it happen. That's the funniest possible outcome. By far.
And then goes 8-4.
All right, last prediction. Melissa Treeblosser, you're the resident TCU fan on this podcast right now. Fill me in on what you think is going to happen.
I mean, I want to believe that TCU can do this, but I watched that game. I watched every single snap of the first game, and the Frogs just don't have the offensive firepower to overcome a really, really solid, really, really good Oklahoma offense. And the sad part is they don't have the offensive firepower to overcome a really average Oklahoma defense.
Yeah,
and that's what concerns them. And I think that the defense is going to really step up. I think they're going to force a turnover, too. And so I think that there'll be some points on the board. But at the end of the day, I don't know if I think Oklahoma wins it all, but they're certainly in contention to do so. And I just, this is one of the worst good TCU teams I've seen. So I think what we're looking at is, I'm going to make it conservative and say 41-34, but if TCU puts up over 30 on Saturday morning, I'll be ecstatic. I just don't see it happening. But, you know, we can hope. We can dream.
All right. Well, you heard all those predictions. I think we all have Oklahoma winning. I'm going to jump on that bandwagon. I think Oklahoma wins at 38-30. I'll give the Horned Frogs 30. This has been the Smoky Musket podcast, everyone. I appreciate everyone for coming on.
I got one last thing. Just to make us laugh at the end of our inevitable depression at Oklahoma winning everything for the rest of forever. I looked up the official Kansas stats under David Beatty. Check this out. 3-33 overall. 1-32 versus FBS opponents. 1-26 versus Big 12 opponents. 2-1 versus FCS schools. 18.1 points per game in 36 games, 42.3 points per game allowed in 36 games. Of those 33 losses, only 11 of them have been within two scores.
Holy cow.
And they're bringing him back.
Yeah.
Because he beat Texas. If he doesn't beat Texas, he's gone.
Be thankful that we don't have that.
The boosters at Kansas not realize that Texas hasn't been good in 4 years? Texas doesn't carry as much weight as it used to.
They don't know what football is
true.
In Kansas. Thank goodness,
it's basketball season.
Exactly.
My man Ron Prince did it, and it diluted the market on everyone else because he beat him so bad. Ron forever, baby.
True.
Ron forever.
Ron forever.
All right, everybody. I appreciate you all joining us on the podcast. Again, we had Melissa Treewasser from Frogs of War. We had Hunter Cook from Big 12 Diehards and like 18 other publications. David Smith, an editor and contributor for Smoking Musket Podcast, and Mike Miller, the site manager. I appreciate you all. And by Godders, thanks for listening in on this podcast. We will talk to you later, and have a good Big 12 championship game weekend.
Go Frogs.
Take it easy.
All right, guys. Thank you all.